Okay, good morning everybody. Thank you for being here to have this Global Preparer Forum meeting. And before we walk into the agenda, we have some new members. And first I want to welcome Maria. And maybe do you want to say some words about your background? And it would be good.
Sure, I'm coming from Canada, but I was actually the chief accountant of the Bank of Nova Scotia, which is a global financial institution. I'm actually originally from South Africa, a KPMG-trained chartered accountant, and we've been very involved through the Canadian Bankers Association on a lot of the ISB standards, so it's actually pretty interesting for me to be involved, so I'm very glad to be part of this team.
Thank you very much. Very interesting, you have the same background as I, because when I also started with KPMG and then was chief accountant for the bank. And we have from our side, we have to introduce Hugh Shields and Huma, and maybe Hugh, you start.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a KPMG love fest, because I also trained at KPMG. I spent roughly half my career at KPMG, actually, and the other half working in the financial reporting side of investment banking, including for Martin, actually. I'm also a proud member of the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Scotland, please note, not England, and have done various projects through the Scottish Institute. And this is week number two for me. I might just mention, actually, might be some interesting context for you. When my job title is Executive Technical Director, so I'm accountable for all the technical work at this point. When the job was first advertised, it was actually advertised as Technical Program Director. So there's a bit of a coded message, not very coded message, that my role includes a lot of focus on the project management side of things. So that might be helpful for you to appreciate. Thank you.
Thank you. Kumar?
Hi, my name is Kumar Das Gupta. Slightly longer than Hugh. I've been with the ISB for the last 6 months. By way of background, accountant, I used to work for, not KPMG, I come from PwC, looking after financial instruments for the IFRS implementation on the Asian side. My role with the ISB is I look after the FI project. I'm the director, technical director responsible for financial instruments.
Thanks, Kumar. Then go into the agenda, and first we have ISB work plan update, and I think we will not focus in this short time, but have a little bit update on revenue, IFRS 9, and the disclosure framework.
Okay, well, shall I kick off on RevRec? You may have noticed when you looked at the work plan that we had recently just updated the timeline on RevRec, and we've moved the final issuance of the standard from quarter one to quarter two, but just to reassure you, we do envisage it being earlier in the quarter rather than later in the quarter. And the other thing to just note about that is not to read too much into the sort of shifting on that timeline, because we really are in the very final stages of it. We're just down to the final editorial corrections and then going through our respective production processes. It's a very long document, but the process of, particularly for the FASB, of incorporating it into the codification is a very big deal, and we're going to issue it jointly. So, as I said, it will be issued early in quarter two. The effective date is 1 January 2017, with early application allowed for IFRS preparers. The other thing I just wanted to say on revenue recognition was that work is underway on the establishing the revenue transition resource group. You'll recall that the purpose of this group is to support preparers through the implementation period as they're going about their processes of getting to grips with the new standard. So it's a limited life group, and we would envisage it winding down probably in that first year of application 2017. When I've been talking to various groups about it over the last few months, there's often been some concerns expressed that the group is going to be issuing a lot of detailed guidance. You know, some people have said, is this going to be like the derivatives implementation group, or the Q&A group that we had for the financial instruments project, and that very much is not what the boards intend. The idea of this group really is just to monitor implementation issues and flag to the boards if they think that further activity is required by the boards, but they themselves will not actually issue any authoritative guidance. So where we are with that group is that we're currently working with the FASB, because it's going to be a joint group. Sorry, I should have said that. So it's a joint group. We're just working on the composition of the group and how it's going to operate, and we hope to make some more announcements around the time that we issue the final standard. So that's it on revenue recognition. I don't know whether you want to have questions at this stage or wait until the end.
Maybe wait, maybe, and have the overall update. Maybe next is on financial instruments.
Sure. Regarding financial instruments, what happened is with classification and measurement and impairment, we completed technical deliberations last month in February. So that's when the technical deliberations got completed by the board. And as part of our due process, the staff got what we call the permission to ballot, effectively start drafting, putting everything together in a document, which will then become hopefully the standard. As of now, we expect to get it out by end of Q2, and we mean end towards end of June this year. The point that I'd like to mention with FI is that the effective date for the new standard was debated also, and it's been set as 1st of January 2018. So that's when the mandatory effective date will kick in. And primarily to keep in perspective the requirements of the new impairment model and the expected credit loss model. So that's overview on impairment and classification and measurement. On macro hedging, again, we are near completing the process. We have finished almost near finishing the due process. And again, we will plan to publish by end of this quarter, or maybe early April, first or second week of April, when the due process document, which is a discussion paper, will come out. Now, I don't want to go too much more into it, because we have two sessions just after this on classification, financial instruments covering macro hedging and impairment. So that is when we will go through it in detail. So the key thing is 1st of January 2018 has been set as a mandatory effective date, and we're looking at end of Q2 to come up with the standard.
Okay. Thanks, Kumar. I think next update on disclosure framework.
Thanks, Martin. Three quick things on this. The first is in the very short term, we're actually, the board's voting at the moment on some amendments to IS1. It'll come out as an ED. And these are the things that are supposed to, pardon me, take away some of the very prescriptive language, for example. And the type of thing that we're doing in there is that I think if you look at the section in IS1 on the balance sheet or statement of financial position, it says at a minimum an entity shall disclose, and we're going to strike out the words at a minimum, and adding a paragraph, for example, that says something like, notwithstanding that a standard uses the words at a minimum or has a specific list, you still have to, basically tells you must still look at materiality. And we have some language in there saying that materiality is not only about making sure that useful information is disclosed, but you don't overwhelm the useful information with trivial disclosures. So we're just trying to get people to think more carefully about these types of issues. That's in the balloting phase now, so we're probably about 3 to 4 weeks away from getting that out as an ED. I think it's election as it's the standard 120 days, so that's short term. The other two things we're looking at is we have, I'll call it a project, but we have some work going on materiality to try and help us understand what problems there are in applying the concept. This is something that's clearly more of interest to you than it is to potentially investors, for example, because you're having to work with the words. And every time we mention materiality, and I've got identify an American in the room, they'll tell me about the Supreme Court cases and stay away from this. This is not the accounting standard setter's domain, this is security regulators. So you don't need to give me that little talk now, but we have a project. The project team includes the ISB, we have IOSCO, including the SEC, and we have the auditors on the IAASB. So we have a team that's looking at materiality. And so we're trying to, I think one of the biggest things that will come out of this is much more understanding about how, for example, auditors think about materiality. Because there's a difference between an auditor's materiality threshold to put it onto an audit committee agenda, as opposed to the threshold to make an adjustment in the financial statements. And they often talk about error adjustment, as opposed to materiality when you think about disclosure. So we're also trying to raise awareness, particularly amongst the regulators, and get them away from treating this as a compliance exercise where they tick things off and write you letters when they can't find something on the list, or publish reports that indicate that disclosure requirements weren't met by, you know, 3% or 4% of the companies and so on. So I think at the moment we're in problem definition phase, and we expect to take a paper to our board in about June that will identify how materiality is used in different environments, different jurisdictions, and for different purposes. At that point, we're going to decide what to do with materiality. We've been cautioned against, and I'm firmly in this camp, I don't think we're going to develop much application guidance, and particularly quantitative thresholds and things like that. It's more of a case, I think, of making sure that people understand, given that materiality is an entity-specific relevance, understanding why a standard set is, we think, a particular piece of information is relevant to a decision, so that then you can work out whether it's important enough to disclose. And I know I'm spending a bit of time on materiality, but one of the issues or examples that we're using for materiality is accounting policies, because this is one we keep on hearing about boilerplate. We tell you, by the way, another problem, as well as materiality, we talk about significant accounting policies. We don't tell anybody what makes a policy significant. We just say, present the significant policies. Now, unless we tell you what significant means, or what makes something significant, it's very hard for you then to put a materiality threshold over the top of that. And in the paper that we've got going to our board, we give as two examples of what might make an accounting policy relevant, is it causes big differences between cash flows and accruals. That could be one measure of relevance. Or that is a policy choice, or that includes estimation, a large amount of estimation uncertainty. So unless we actually specify that, I think it's very difficult for you, because you've got to make two decisions. Why is it relevant? And two, is it important enough to disclose? So we're going to try and, we think, work on that. Why is something particularly relevant to a decision? The third thing, which is again another scope paper for our board, is on the scope of our, what we call the POD project. We have all these acronyms, so it's the Principles of Disclosure. And the very tricky thing is, what we're trying to do is to ultimately replace IS1, which is Presentation of Financial Statements, IS7, Cash Flows, and potentially IS8, which is the Accounting Policies, because it's about comparability, and put them all into one standard. It's very, very difficult if you're focusing on a project that looks mainly at the principles of disclosure to ignore the income statement, the balance sheet, and cash flow statement, because the notes of the financial statements work with the financial statements. And our challenge in this is that if I said, in this room in particular, if I said, well, really, it's financial statement presentation project, I can imagine the reaction I might get. If I was with the Capital Markets Advisory Committee, I'd get a very positive reaction, because they want us to open that project up again. So we've got a paper that looks at the scope of the Principles of Disclosure project, and how, not so much defining how far we should go, but what issues we should potentially look at in there. And I think it's fair to say that there, by definition, we have to look at some aspects of presentation, because you just can't look at these things in isolation. As part of the build-up for that, I think we've decided that we're going to, not all of our board members are involved in financial statement presentation or have the scars that went along with that little journey. So before we do develop the project much further, we're going to be having some education sessions for our board to find out what we learnt during FSP, so that if we do open up the box and unseal it, that we know to act very carefully when we bring topics out for discussion. Because as soon as I talk about this with anybody, the first two things that come up are direct cash flows three things: direct cash flows, cohesiveness, and reconciliations. And people start to get really worried that we're going to just open the whole thing up again. The project on disclosure is designed to be very much an action-oriented project to try and improve the usefulness of information, and so we don't want this being dragged down by potentially creating another FSP project. So,
okay, thanks, Alan. And before we open discussion, I think the last update is on insurance contracts, and we don't have one on leases and conceptual framework because we have separate sessions later today on that, but on insurance. And
dramatic intervention. I thought I was going to give my get out of jail card there. Just a few words quickly about insurance, the insurance project, and where it is. The project is about to enter a sort of intensive phase now because we're going into the redeliberations of the second exposure draft. You remember we issued that exposure draft last year. We received something like 200 comment letters on that exposure draft, and we undertook very extensive outreach activities, including sort of detailed field work with about 20 participants. Now, all of that feedback was reported to the boards at the January board meeting. And so next week, we actually start the redeliberations and looking at two of the five targeted areas that were focused on in the exposure draft. And we currently envisage that the redeliberations will proceed through the remainder of this year, and our intention is to publish the final standard sometime next year. Now, clearly we haven't set an effective date yet, it's sort of too early in the process, but what we've always said with the insurance contracts project is that there would be a period of approximately 3 years between issuance and final effective date. And that was something that boards were thinking about when they set the effective date for IFRS 9. The other thing I just wanted to note on the insurance contracts project is, because you've probably seen that the FASB has decided to sort of refocus their own insurance contract insurance project, and they're going to focus on making targeted improvements to their existing standards. And that's as a result of the feedback that they got on their own exposure draft that was also issued last year. So this does mean that we're now not planning to be working sort of jointly to issue a converged standard as we have been in the past. But I think the key point to notice is that, you know, there's been a lot of joint working on this project. There's a lot of shared knowledge. There's a lot of sort of shared sort of views on certain aspects, although of course there's some differences. But the FASB were very clear that when they made that decision to sort of focus on making targeted improvements to US GAAP, they will of course be thinking about and looking at the decisions that we've made in our own work. So there still remains sort of scope for sort of convergence, or at least directional convergence over many aspects here. So I think that's all I wanted to say about insurance.
Okay, thanks, Henry. Do we have any comments, questions to the current agenda beside my leases and others, what we want to discuss later? Bob?
I had one question and a couple follow-up comments.
The one question, can you remind me the classification of acceptable methods of depreciation and amortization, what that project's all about?
That's the revenue-based depreciation. It's to do with some concerns, particularly I think in the film industry, or something about depreciation when people are using revenue as the basis for determining depreciation rates. And it's some amendments were made to I-16 and, I always get it wrong, 38, so that saying that you can't just do that. They might be correlated, but you're supposed to start at the other end of the scale. You're supposed to start for the asset. That's in final stages. I think that's it's a finalisation of that as a narrow scope amendment, so that should be out soon.
Okay, good. Two comments if I can. The first one is I want to condemn.
Condemn.
This is on record.
Commend.
let me say that two more times, commend the IASB, especially the advisory committee. Was real grateful to see there was discussion about integrated reporting. It seemed like a robust discussion at the advisory committee. I'd like to personally thank Alan, although he has that ridiculous growth on his face. Mm-hmm. I'd like to personally thank him for how much he's been involved in and spearheading and giving us insight into integrated reporting. Unfortunately, it's a non-discussion in the United States, which is really troubling to me. And I want to commend the IASB for discussing it at the advisory committee. And even when you see the UK is much more progressive than the United States, with the FRC having a financial reporting lab, it pains me to see that we in the US are so far behind talking about that issue. The second issue is just a comment that came up in our pre-meeting. Not sure what to say of it, but I wanted to just say, give one punchline at the end. The SEC is still looking at it, but unfortunately, it looks like we've missed an opportunity of a lifetime to get one set of global accounting standards. I think we're going to kick ourselves decades from now, that we missed this opportunity. As we'll get into this discussion, it looks like there's going to be more divergence than ever. I personally believe it was lack of leadership and self-interest that occurred. And I'll blame myself as one of them self-interested people. We at Microsoft looked at adopting IASB standards back a few years ago, and it looked like a lot of work. My first reaction is, I don't know if I really want to do this work. Well, that was misguided. Now we're fast forward as Microsoft's in the process of acquiring Nokia's devices and service business. So we're actually doing the same exercise, maybe on a smaller scale, that we would have done. And if we want to acquire more international companies, we'll probably have to do it all over again. And let alone to say about statutory reporting, what we need to keep track of it. Maybe there's still a hope. I'm not positive about it. It's really bad for the profession that we had lack of leadership and self-interest. And what I wanted to just say is, while we have the discussion today, and we especially as preparers, can we think first about what's best for the profession instead of what's best for us personally? It's time that we as this profession stand up and do the right thing. And I may have comments and disagree about some stuff, but we really got to think about the profession and not our self-interest. And I hope we get going that way, because it's pretty disgusting, quite actually, what we've done to our profession.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Hiroshi?
I have a question regarding the principle of disclosure project. We have, in Japan, we have a concern the scope of this project. I have an impression that this project might have some aspect of financial statement presentation project that was suspended, such as cohesive business financial statements and direct cash flow might be treated in this project. I think you should focus on the topics. You should not expand too much.
Well aware of that.